All right, good evening, everyone. I'm sorry, I apologize, I'm a few minutes late. All right, so let's begin. So first of all, our shiur tonight, the series is sponsored by Richard Simon in memory of his grandmother, Elka Freda Bas Chana Alea Shalom, and by Toso family in memory of Karen's father, Elio Gershon Ben Faival HaKohen Zichron Lebracha. We hope that the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamas have an aliyah. Okay, so just to, we continue along here. We continue along tonight in the 11th bracha in Shmona Esrei. So let's begin with number one. Hashiva, now this bracha is called Mishpat. Bracha is simply called the bracha of justice. Hashiva Shavtinu Kavarishona. Restore our judges as at first. If anyone's cold in here, you could feel free. Just turn the thermostat up. It's not, I don't know, it's something every week we seem to have a struggle in this. In this room, but okay. Hashiva Shavtinu Kavarishona, literally restore our judges as at first, V'yotzinu Kivatchilo, and our counselors as at the beginning, V'haseri Mene Yagov V'anacha, and remove from us our sorrow and our sighing, U'meloch Aleinu Ato Hashem Levadcha B'chesed U'v'rachamim V'tzadkinu B'mishpat, and may you alone, Lord, reign over us with loving kindness and compassion, and vindicate us in justice. Baruch Atah Hashem, Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat. Blessed are you, Lord, the King who loves righteousness and justice. Okay, so the obvious question is, what is now, obviously the basic theme of this bracha seems to be a desire for some greater level of justice, some greater level of judicial system. So what specifically are we asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for? So if you take a look at number two, Rabbi Sachs, in his commentary on the Siddur, writes the following. Blessing number 11, justice. He says, this is a prayer for self-government. The judges in the biblical book of that name, meaning the judges in the Sefer Shoftim, were not merely judges in a legal sense. They were leaders of the people. The prayer for the restoration of judges following the ingathering of exiles is thus a plea for the return of national sovereignty. Remember again, if you go with the idea that Shmona Esrei, we actually spoke about this a while ago, that there are two conflicting accounts as to when Shmona Esrei was actually created. One opinion says that it was Shimon HaPakuli, which was an individual during the First Temple era, and the second opinion said that it was Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly, which would make them post-First Temple era. So one of the suggestions that we saw was that originally Shimon HaPakuli instituted it, then it was forgotten, and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah reinstituted it afterwards. What's interesting, if you go with the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they're codifying Shmona Esrei in a time where there is no Jewish sovereignty. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, we've been exiled, and we're alone. We're alone, we're forsaken, we're drowning. And so Rabbi Sachs suggests that what this bracha asks, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, restore a sense of national sovereignty. Return our autonomy. We are tired of being at the mercy of others. Allow us to be an independent people who are capable of standing on our own. V'haseri mene yagov v'anacha, remove from us sorrow and sighing. The plaint of a people who have known the full precariousness of being dependent on the goodwill of others. So according to Rabbi Sachs, this idea where we ask God to remove from us our sorrow and sighing. What sorrow and sighing are we referring to over here? The sorrow and sighing of being dependent on others. The sorrow and sighing of having to live at the whim of others. And in fact, if you take a look at number three, this is quite interesting. This is from the Sefer Baruch Sha'amar. I've quoted to you from this Sefer before, Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein. And you can see his biography here. He writes the following. He says, Kasha Lahavin, Yachas Hemshech Haloshon V'Haseri Mene Yagom V'Anacha Le'in HaShavas HaShoftim. See, he's bothered by, what does this phrase mean when we ask God to remove from us our sorrow and our sighing? Right? What does that mean? What does that have to do with restoration of judges? And he writes over here, Ki alo ein kol yachas b'nehem. What's the connection? V'ra'isi b'sefer dumdumechama. Maybe misider kisve yad yashan, ksav yad yashan oshan. So he says, I saw an ancient manuscript of a siddur. And what did it say in this manuscript? This is amazing. V'sham hanusach tachas haloshan v'asemin en yagom v'anacha. In that siddur, instead of having it there, remove from us yagom v'anacha, our sorrow and our sighing. Instead, what does it say there? V'asemin enu malchas yavon v'romi. Instead, in this old edition of the Siddur, what it said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remove from us the monarchy of Greece and Rome. So he suggests, the Karov Lomar, it must be, Ki Shaltu Bazet Yidei Mevakrim. Bless you. What are Mevakrim? Sensorim Kanoim. Very, very vigilant censors. So it must have been at some point in time, someone got a hold of the Siddur. And what did they do? They blotted out Yavan and Romi. They blotted out, which again, many of our texts have been censored. So somebody censored the Siddur. We don't want anything negative about Greece or Rome. And what happens? And it could be that over time, there was this blank part in the Siddur. And so at some point in time, someone filled in this blank space with the words, Yagon va'anacha, remove from us sorrow and sighing. He says, and really what they were talking about is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, spare us from the pain of these other kingdoms that have ruled over us. So what's interesting is both Rabbi Epstein as well as Rabbi Sachs are really echoing the same idea. What are we asking for in this bracha? We're asking for restoration of national sovereignty. Let us be our own people who govern ourselves. Why? It has been so painful to live under the whim and direction of others. So restore national sovereignty in order that all of the pain that living under other brings could finally dissipate and be taken away. So that's our first approach. Basic request for now. Again, remember, this is not now for the individual. This is really for the collective. The collective is asking for restoration of national sovereignty. And by doing sacraments, you remove from us all of the pain that the Gentile governments visit upon us. Take a look at a second approach, number four. So again, from the Sefer Baruch Shamar, he says something very beautiful over here. He says, "V'amnam nochachti ki efsha lekayim hanusach kimoshu lefaneinu bi'ikar v'yisodo." Or the second possibility is, no, maybe the nusach, maybe the verbiage was always v'haser mimena yagon va'anocha. Maybe that was always the verbiage that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remove from us sorrow and sighing. So what is the bracha? So what does that have to do? The question is, what does that phrase have to do with the restoration of our judges? So he says something beautiful. V'zeh apia gemar de Shabbos im ra'isa dar shetzaros rabos ba'os alav. If you see a generation that suffers terribly, say ubidok b'dayani Yisrael. Go and check their judges. Go, if you see a lot of suffering happening, essentially see if there is a just legal system in place. Mipnei shem mevaosim hadim. Ayin sham. Vahaloshon saros rabos. So first of all, what he says is, the Gemara brings down this idea that often calamity occurs because a lack of proper judicial infrastructure. Where there is no justice in society, then ultimately, again, society begins to crumble and implode. And saros rabos, much suffering, is felt by the common man. Look at the second paragraph. V'zohi kavanas nosach ha'tfila. And this is the meaning of this paragraph. Hashiva shoftinu kvarishona, v'yotzenu kivatfila. Restore our judges as at first and our counselors as at the beginning. V'hainu tzadikim v'yisharim kimo shehayu lifnim. This refers to the righteous people of the past. V'lo ya'avus sohadin, v'lo yisavavu tzaros rabos. In order that they not corrupt justice and not create suffering. U'bazeh yasuru mimeno yagom va'anocha ha'boim l'ragla yidon mubostin. So according to the second approach, what Rav Epstein is suggesting is the following. We are saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help us, restore to us the people who are capable of bringing justice to our society. We need a just society. Because if we don't have a just society, then what happens? There is yagon va'anocha. There's suffering. Now, by the way, that's not metaphysical suffering. That's a very real suffering. Without justice, without proper infrastructure to govern the day-to-day lives of people, society disintegrates right in front of you. So therefore, says the Baruch Sha'amar, the following idea. When we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the restoration of a legal system, and by the way, the first two approaches are not mutually exclusive. When we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the restoration of sovereignty, of national sovereignty, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the restoration of our judges. What we're asking God is to allow us, give us the circumstances that allow us to create a just society. Why? Because it's painful to live without justice. Because it's painful to live without tzedek. Because it's painful to live without emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we suffer so much. If you restore national sovereignty, approach one, if you restore ultimately righteousness in our judges, v'aser mimenu yagon v'anacha, it will remove so much suffering from the collective as well as from the individual. But I want to share with you now a third approach. And with this, we're going to spend the remainder of our time this evening. So there's an interesting Gemara. If you take a look at number 5, so the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin says the following. Rabbi Eliezer benosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, said the following. Asr liftsoa. Asr liftsoa. Now, asr liftsoa means what? You are not permitted to compromise. No compromise. V'chol avotzea, and if you compromise, harez yachote, it's a sin. Now, who is Rabbi Eliezer talking to over here? He's really talking to the judge. So the judge, you're supposed to adjudicate the case between two parties, no compromise. Why is there no compromise? Because there's a right and there's a wrong. And your job as the judge is to try to figure out who's right, who's wrong. But if you compromise, then what are you doing? One thing is for sure, which is if you compromise, what's happened?
You're right?
You certainly haven't done the right thing. That's for sure, right? Because again, somebody's right, somebody's wrong. When you compromise, you give a little bit to both parties, which means that you have not fully vindicated the party who is right. Therefore, thus it says, compromise is usur. And if you compromise injustice, you're a sinner. The chalam avarichas sabotzia, and anyone who praises the one who initiates compromise, hareze minait. This is blasphemy. The alze ne'emar, and about this it says, Botsea Beirach Niet Sashem. And about this it says that literally one who praises compromise has blasphemed God. So what should you do if compromise is usur? Ella Yikov Hadin Eshahar. Rather, what's the proper approach to life? Literally, let justice split the mountain. In other words, in life, there's right and there's wrong. There's white and there's black. This night and day, there's no gray. There is no middle ground. You have to decide what is right, and you have to draw your line in the sand. Shene emar ki ha-mishpat le'elokim hi. Who? V'chei Moshe haya omer. Similarly, the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu used to say what? Yikov ha-din eshahar. Moshe Rabbeinu was not a man of compromise, which is, by the way, why Moshe Rabbeinu was not very well liked by the general people. Moshe Rabbeinu was not very popular. When did people like Moshe Rabbeinu? When he died, right? Then certainly everybody loves Moshe. When he was alive, his popularity ratings were probably not that much better than the president. When he was alive, people did not like him very much at all. Why? People in general never like leaders who have to take stands. I mean, they like leaders who make them happy and make them feel good and validate them. But leaders who have to say, I'm sorry, this is not okay, we don't do this, generally tend to make a lot of enemies. Moshe Rabbeinu was a man of MS. In Moshe Rabbeinu, there was right and there was wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu said, let justice split the mountain. There is no gray. On the other hand, Aaron, Oev Shalom, Berodev Shalom. On the other hand, Aaron was the man of compromise. He was a lover of peace, pursuer of peace. Umeisim Shalom ben Adam lechaveiro. And he would make peace between his man and his fellow. So first of all, number 6, this is just very interesting over here. So first of all, we're familiar with this split in the Moshe Aaron personality. That's why they were such a beautiful two-headed leadership model, because they both brought different traits to the table. So Moshe Rabbeinu, no pshara, no compromise, there's right, there's wrong. Aaron doesn't disagree with the fact that there's right and there's wrong, but Aaron says, you know what? The world is not that simple, my dear brother. Right? We have to make compromise because we have to allow people to coexist. So look at number 6 for just a moment. So the Netziv comments over here. He says, what does Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't compromise? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do this? Right? Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu compromise? He says, Shemoshe Rabbeinu bechachmaso hagidola haya mahir mishpat. So then it says something amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu, had such clarity of vision that when two people came before him in a particular case, after he heard their sides, what did he see? What did he see? He saw who was right and he saw who was wrong. To deliver a verdict, anything other than innocent, guilty, in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes would have been a perversion of justice. If I know what's right and I know what's wrong, then how can I possibly initiate the process of compromise? That is a perversion of justice. On the other hand, what does Aaron say? What's Aaron's side of this? Aaron also has that clarity. Aaron also believes in right and wrong. So it could be that maybe Aaron didn't have the vision of Moshe. That's possible. Maybe Aaron did not have the same penetrating insight into right and wrong like Moshe Rabbeinu did. That is possible. Or alternatively, Aaron possessed that vision as well. But Aaron also understood that life is not about right and wrong. Life is also about community. A people can only exist how? If there's a platform of relationship building. And platforms of relationship building, by definition, require a give and take, require a compromise, require vatronos, a willingness to give up that which you may be entitled to. In any event, this is the fundamental personality dispute between Moshe and Aaron. Moshe, Yikov Hadine Sahar, let justice split the mountain. No compromise, no prisoners. There's right, there's wrong. Aaron, pshara. We always try to make compromise. So what's interesting, of course, about this is not just simply, you know, an interesting dispute between Moshe and Aaron. This has major ramifications. What's the major ramifications? What should we do? Right? What should we do? Remember, this is also not just about a judge. This is about life. It's about life. You know, one of the things we always struggle with in life is when should you take a stand on something versus when should you just let something go? So parents deal with this all the time, right? What are the battles that are worth fighting? And what are the things that you really should just say, you know what, it's not that big of a deal, let it go. It's not just parents, in life in general, what are the things that we stand up for and that we make noise about, that we draw a line in the sand about? And what are the things that we say in the big scheme of things, it's not necessarily all that important. So are we pshara people or are we din people? What's our appropriate approach? So if you look at number 7, so the tour, Rav Yaakov ben Asher, addresses this. And look what he says. He says, U'mitzvah ledayon lahaschil lahem bipshara. So this is the tour, again, remember, in the laws of judges, Hilchos Dayan. There's a whole section of Shulchan Aruch that talks about how to be a judge, what are the obligations of the judge. So the tour begins by saying, the first mitzvah being a judge is what? Offer the opportunity to compromise. That's what you should put out to the litigants first thing. Are you interested in reaching a compromise? B'ma'atem rotzim. What do you want? B'ma'atem rotzim yoser. B'pshara o b'din. So the tour says, the first thing, judge, you have to do is you have to extend the possibility of compromise. And it's actually interesting. So what the judge has to do is he has to offer both possibilities. Are you interested in compromise, or do you want me to adjudicate this case guilty, innocent? Now, if you notice, interesting, which option does he place first? Pshara. So the Torah says the first thing that the first service that a judge offers the litigants is, would you like me to help you reach a settlement? Would you like me to help you reach a compromise? Afilu im shama divrayem. Excuse me. So he goes on. Look at the last two lines of number 7. V'chol dayon sha'osa pshara tamid. Any judge who always engages in compromise, hareze meshubach. Such a judge is praiseworthy. Va'alav ne'emar, and about such an individual, it is said, Emes u'mishpat shalom shavtu b'sha'arechem. Eiz u'mishpat sheyesh bo shalom. What is an example of judgment that has peace with it? Zop shara. This refers ultimately to compromise. So the Torah paskins, that who do we hold like in the machlokus din Moshe and Aaron? We hold like Aaron. Halacha l'maaseh, pass like Aaron. And therefore, again, this is even in a court, which is even today, if you go to Beis Din's first objective is, can we reach an agreement? Can we reach a compromise? Sometimes parties don't want to reach a compromise, in which case Beis Din has no choice but to hear the case and to decide innocent or guilty. But the first step is pshara. Can we reach a compromise? Look at number 8. And this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Mitzvah le Ba'alei Dinim. The mitzvah of the Ba'alei Dinim Tchila. It is a mitzvah to say to the litigants first. Hadin atem rotzim o apshara. Do you want us, the judges, to adjudicate the case, or do you want to reach a compromise? It's interesting that the Shulchan Aruch switches the order. He puts din first before pshara. Everyone jumps on the Shulchan Aruch. All the commentaries wonder where the Shulchan Aruch, why he switched the order. Im ratzu bepshara, if they want a compromise, osin beinehem pshara. Then the judges act in a more mediation type capacity and try to hammer out a compromise. If you look at number 9, the Nesivas HaMishpat writes, O Apshara, U mitzvah lahaspir lahem sheyirtsu b'apshara. So here the Nesivas Shalom says, and you know what? It's the judge's responsibility to what to tell them? Litigants, we believe it's in your best interest to go for pshara. What the Nesiva Mishpat is adding in over here is he's saying that the judges don't have to stand by the sidelines and wait for the litigants to decide. The judges are obligated to actually push the litigants towards pshara, towards compromise. So halacha lemaaseh, you see that we adopt the view of Moshe Rabbeinu, and literally, whenever possible, we always go towards pshara. Excuse me, Aaron, and we go towards pshara. Yes.
So the judges are not impartial in a way, because they're not taking the two people that come and like judging it on and deciding based on the evidence. They're already saying, go pshara.
Correct. Well, they are impartial because they haven't even heard anything yet. They don't even know what's going on. They're just simply saying, instead of making this into something bigger, can we settle this? Can we settle this? Can we create a mishpat that also has shalom?
Okay, so their ultimate goal is supposed shalom, but if two people come to the basement and one is wrong, one is like really had done something wrong, and he's been brought to the, and he comes to the basement, which already says it's a good thing to come.
Excellent.
And the other one is really correct, then the one who is totally in the wrong is getting
good. So excellent question. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch explain there are exceptions to this rule. An exception would be cases like you're describing. Clearly, if the case comes to Beis Din and someone is bringing someone else to Beis Din for gross negligence, wrongdoing. So in those kind of cases, pshara might not be the right approach. You know, if you and I have a dispute about something, and the truth is, you know, you say X, I say Y, but there's a little bit of overlap here. When the Beis Din feels pshara is appropriate, they go for pshara. But correct, thank you for bringing this up. It's not pshara in all cases, because some cases don't lend themselves to pshara. Some cases, but whenever the case potentially lends itself to pshara, that's what we go with first. Yes.
How do we take the Talmud and seems like the Shulchan Aruch and the Talmud are like in direct opposition here. That like the Talmud is saying it's usher to compromise.
No. We only quoted to you one opinion there. That's Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. But remember, then the Gemara itself quotes Aaron, quotes that Aaron did. So the Gemara itself quotes two different opinions.
Okay.
So no, correct. The Shulchan Aruch would not have a right to just rule in direct opposition to a Gemara. Right. It's just that the Gemara itself includes more opinions that are supportive of the Aaron HaKohen approach. Excellent point. So now we're seeing, let me clarify my words. So now we'll make a pshara. So now, meaning when the case lends itself to pshara, the mitzvah on the Beis Din is to go for that option first. That's the Shulchan Aruch's fascinating. But the obvious question is why? Because, okay, so you could tell me because we're adopting the approach of Aaron HaKohen, but if you think about it, Moshe Rabbeinu's approach is much more emistic, right? You know, one thing which is clear with compromise, the one thing that is the hallmark of all compromises, and that is no one is happy, right? That's the sign of a good compromise, right? No one really gets there. And the truth is, one thing you haven't done is you haven't served the needs of justice. Pshara is not justice. Pshara is a way to keep shalom. That's really the motivation. So, yes.
That Emmet can't exist. You know, Hashem took Emmet and he threw it to the ground, because in this world we really can't.
Emmet is different than mishpat. Mm-hmm. Emmet is different than mishpat. Correct. Unequivocal, unadulterated truth perhaps is only found with God. That's possible. Mishpat, justice, there is a concept of justice. Meaning, if the judges sit down, Reuben and Shimon come in, they're having an argument. So if the judges hear out the facts, they call in the witnesses, they can get to the truth. They can get them. That is possible. Courts do that. It's possible. So to say, interestingly enough, that no, we don't want you to do that. We don't want you to do that. The preferred method is pshara. Why? So the simple answer is because Shalom. The simple answer is because maybe this is the approach of Aaron Cohen. Aaron Cohen felt that sometimes, you know, why is mishpat, why is justice so important? Because justice is the bedrock of society. You know, there's another bedrock of society, and it is, that is, Shalom. Shalom. So maybe, as important as mishpat is as a pillar for society, maybe at the end of the day, Shalom is just as, if not more important than that. And therefore, when you have an opportunity, because remember again, you know, if there's one thing that people don't like, it's what? Being told that they're wrong. No one really likes being told that they're wrong. And the problem is that if you deliver a guilty verdict, you've effectively told someone that they're wrong. The good part about pshara is what? Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. But it's the same, meaning, no, you know, nobody's walking out with their head like this because they were just found guilty. At the end of the day, we had a dispute, and we chose of our own volition to reconcile. Who's right, who's wrong? We're not casting that determination. So maybe there is this idea that maybe the greater needs of society are better served by pshara, even though pshara comes at the expense of din, of real justice. But I want to suggest something else. Take a look at number 10. So the Torah says over here, actually it's the pasuk quoted in number 7 by the Torah. The Torah says, Lo sakiru panim b'mishpat. Literally, you shall not favor persons in judgment. Kakaton kagadol tishmaun. You shall hear the small just as the great. Lo saguru mipnei ish. You shall not fear any man. Ki ha-mishpat le'lokim hu. Because the mishpat, justice, belongs to God. V'hadover asher yiksha mikem takrivu ol aylai ushmativ. And the case that is too difficult for you, bring to me and I will hear it. Remember, this is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the judges underneath him. Remember, this was Yisro's idea of setting up a whole judicial system. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to his judges, listen, whatever you do, treat everybody the same. Everybody is equal in your eyes. Don't give more respect to the rich man, or don't give more pity to the poor man. Ultimately, justice belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't be afraid of any one of the repercussions of doing the right thing. And if it gets too difficult for you, just bring it to me. Now, what's intriguing about this pasuk is this phrase, Ki HaMishpat LeElokim Hu. What does that mean? For justice belongs to God. First of all, you don't even need that phrase here. Why do you need it? Moshe is giving them simple instructions. What do you mean? Because justice belongs to God. So look at number 11. This is really amazing. I've quoted for you in 11 and 12 from the Targum Yonasan. So the Targum Yonasan is an Aramaic commentary on the Torah written by Yonasan ben Uziel. Who was Yonasan ben Uziel? He was the primary disciple of Talmud Mufak of Hillel. So Yonasan ben Uziel writes a commentary on the Torah in Aramaic. And look what he writes over here. If you look at the now, number 12 by the Keser Yonasan is just a Hebraicized version of the Targum Yonasan. So 11 is the Aramaic, 12 is the Hebrew. So let's look in the Aramaic for just a moment. Number 11, Aram Dina Min Kadam Hashem. Literally, justice occurs before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chamei Kol Tumariyah. And in front of him, all secrets are revealed. Look at 12. Mishpat Melifnei Hashem. Now look at it in Hebrew. Because all justice is done before God. Viroa kol hanistaros. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees all that is hidden. Now, what does that mean, that God sees all that is hidden? So what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? What does this mean? I think Moshe Rabbeinu is highlighting, and Torah is highlighting, an incredible idea. Human judgment is inherently impaired and imperfect. Why? You know, in Halacha, there's a phrase, and Gemara has this phrase, Ein hadayon lodun elama she'enov ro'os, which means what? The judge only has the ability to base his judgment based on what? Based on what's told to him. Based on what's told to him. So says Moshe Rabbeinu, ki ha-mishpat le'elokim hu. You know why true justice belongs to God? Because God has an incredible talent. And what's that? He's the bochen levavos. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows what I'm feeling. He knows what's fact. He knows what's fiction. Human judgment, by definition, is flawed and impaired. Why? Again, it doesn't mean that every single time a person, a human judge, delivers a verdict that it's wrong. But what it's saying is there's a handicap that the human judge works with. Why? Because he could only operate based on the information that's given to him, which means that ultimately, if the litigants lie, if the litigants corrupt, the human judge has no idea. He does his due diligence, but at the end of the day, he can only base his decision based on the information that he has at hand. You know, it's an interesting Mishnah in Avos. The Mishnah says, talking to the judge, Kishu bali din omdin lefanecha, when the litigants stand before you, you have to view them both as liars, the Mishnah says, as Rishoyim. So the Maharal of Prague says, what does that mean, right? What about innocent until proven guilty? Why do you have to look at them as both liars? The Maharal says, because they are both liars. What does that mean? What's interesting is, and this is something we have to be very aware of, when you give over information, right, when you retell something to someone, that is not fact. Why? Because whenever you retell information, I'm telling it through my lens. I'm saying it the same way that we could all look at a particular event and we may draw very different things. Why? Because we absorb all information through our personal filter. Which means when I absorb information and then I retell that information, that's not information in a vacuum. That's not objectively true information. That's information as processed by my life filter. So says the Mishnah in Avos, when the litigants are standing in front of you, there's one thing you can be absolutely sure of, and that is neither of them are telling you the absolute truth. Now, it doesn't mean they're trying to deceive you. It doesn't mean they're trying to, you know, pull the rug over your eyes. Thank you. Right. I knew the rug over your eyes didn't sound right. Right. Because they're trying to pull the wool over your eyes. Again, not actively. They're not actively lying. But just understand that what you hear is their perception of the truth. What you hear is their iteration, their coloration of the truth. But one thing is clear. It's not objective truth. The only place that objective truth, and this does come back to the MS piece, the only place where objective truth can be found is where? With HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it says the Targum Yonos, and that's what it means, Ki HaMishpat LeElokim Hu. That Mishpat, true justice, only with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, again, man could do a pretty good job. Man can do a pretty decent job, but he can only trade with the information that he has at hand. Ki HaMishpat LeElokim Hu, true justice. So now we understand, by the way, why from a halachic perspective, we place an incredible emphasis on Pshara. Why do we place an emphasis on Pshara? Because the truth is, Pshara is actually a better alternative for us. Because every justice, every legal decision is always handicapped. So it's not the Pshara. You see, when Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yikov Hadin HaHar, let justice split the mountain down the middle, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say that. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had incredible clarity, because he had clarity from the divine. Hey, clarity from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see things almost kiviyachol the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able. So Moshe Rabbeinu could say, justice, 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 justice. There is no compromise. There's right and wrong. But for the rest of us, that do not have that level of Moshe or divine clarity, we know that if we were to go the Mishpat route, there's always the handicap. Always. And it doesn't matter how smart you are or wise you are, there's always the handicap that I never know what's in the heart of the other. I never know what's in the mind of the other. So all I could do is base my decisions on the information that's given to me that I already know A is skewed, because every time we give information, we give it from a skewed perspective. I know it's skewed and it may not be whole. Therefore, the halacha says, once I know, ki hamishpat le'elokim hu, once I know that, pshara becomes, compromise becomes the preferred lechatchila approach to conflict resolution. Now look at 13. Based on this, in the Sefer Nesibine, he says something very beautiful. He says, perosha apashot hatoim, hatoim yishpatu al da'atcho, v'lo al das adam, ki ha'adam yira le'inayim. This is actually, he's quoting over here, this phrase is used by Shmuel HaNavi. Right? When Shmuel goes to anoint the king from among the sons of Yishai, so he sees all of the strapping young men, Yishai's sons, and he says, oh, that's the king. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shmuel, Hashem, Adam, Adam, yira le'inayim. Man only sees with his eyes. Vashem, yira le'va. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees in the heart. Al karchach mishpat le'pami mishpat aval. So because man only sees with his eyes and only knows that which he is told and that which he perceives, sometimes his judgment is flawed. Lochin ato yodea hamachshavos. Tadin es hatoim velo anachnu. So the Nesiv Bina says something amazing. You know what we're asking for in this bracha? Hashiva shoftina kavarishon v'yotina kivatchila. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, restore our judges. What, you know what we're really asking for? Umeloch aleinu ato Hashem levadcha. You know what we're really asking for over here? We're asking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want you to judge me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want you. Now again, now what does that mean? Obviously, we always have to have a human system of judges, a human judicial system. But what we're saying over here is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you to either A, judge me yourself, or at least inspire those who are supposed to judge me, that they should be like a Moshe Rabbeinu. Umloch alinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest difficulty we have is that at the end of the day, we judge things wrongly. And as a result, we have incredible yagon va'anacha. And I want to point out over here that I think what the bracha is conveying to us over here is on two levels. You see, you could look at this on a societal level. And on a societal level, what do we say? Kodesh Baruch Hu. You know, right now we live in a world of pshara. And why do we live in a world of pshara? Because the truth is, human judgment is impaired. Human judgment is limited. Human judgment is flawed. But Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know what we want? We don't really want to live. You see, this is an interesting thing. We have to ask ourselves, do we really want to live in a world of gray? Or would we rather live in a world of black and white? And what's the answer? It's a hard question to answer, by the way. It's not so pashut. But it would seem that the ability to live in a world that is clearly, that clearly discerns right from wrong would be a better, loftier, holier existence. We don't have that luxury now, because the truth is most of us swim in seas of gray. That's what happens. And so in the seas of gray, in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Pshara is the way to go. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know we're asking of you? Restore us to the world of black and white. Restore us to the world of Yikov HaDin Esahar. Let justice split the mountain. You know, one of the things we struggle with so much in life is the ability to distinguish between that which is right and that which is wrong. We struggle with this every single day. And the ability to stand up for that, which is, because sometimes we're not even sure what should we take a stand for, what shouldn't we take a stand for, and essentially it's compounded by the fact that we live in a society of moral equivalence, right? Everybody's good, everybody's okay, and whatever everybody does has the societal seal of approval, because I don't have any right to judge you, you don't have any right to judge me, and so what ends up happening is there's a total erosion of those lines between right and wrong. That's why they become so incredibly blurred. To see HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a societal level, Hashiva Shoftinu Kavarishona, give us back our judges. And maybe the judges that we're referring to is who? Is Moshe Rabbeinu and his system of judges. Give us back those judges. Give us back the men who had the knowledge, the understanding, and the courage to distinguish between that which is right and that which is wrong. What we're ultimately asking of you, Umeloch aleinu atu Hashem levadcha. Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're really asking of you, you judge us. Obviously, God is not going to sit in judgment of us by himself, but Kodesh Baruch Hu, you inspire those, like just like you did Moshe Rabbeinu, to judge us, not with the world of Pshara, but in the world of Yikov Hadin Esahar. So on a societal level, the Gemara is expressing to us an incredible Yisod, but I think that this, and with this, we can conclude that the Gemara is also teaching us, the Bracha is also teaching us, a very important lesson on a personal level. And what's the lesson on the personal level? The lesson on the personal level is that so often in life, because we live in gray, and because human judgment is handicapped, we make so many bad decisions. We make bad decisions for ourselves, again, not because we don't care, and not even because we don't pay attention, but because we live in this world of gray, and it's not exactly clear what we're supposed to or not supposed to do, and we make bad decisions about others. We judge others. We condemn others based on testimony, so to speak, that we've received through our life filter. And often that information is wrong. That information is compromised. And what happens as a result of that? As a result of making these life judgments for ourselves and about others, that end up being, what happens? We put ourselves in so much pain. We create so much difficulty. You know, in life, we've all made decisions that have handicapped us. Hopefully not too severely, but that's par for the course. We make decisions and we look back on those decisions and we say to ourselves, you know, I wish I didn't make that decision. Of course, I can't change it now. I'm stuck with it. And then I ask myself, why did I make that decision? It's not because I was asleep at the wheel. It's not because I didn't do my due diligence. It's because sometimes, you know, you make your decisions with the best information you have at your disposal at the time that you have to make the decision. But sometimes in retrospect, it's just not the right decision. That's the impact of living in the world of gray. We pass judgment on others because we see something, we hear something. And again, right here and now, things look a certain way. And as a result of those bad decisions, there is so much yagon va'anacha. There is so much suffering and difficulty. So perhaps what we're asking in this bracha is the following. It's a two-part. So again, there's the societal piece. But on the personal level, perhaps what we're asking God is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me sensitize myself to the short-sightedness of my own personal judgments. When I make decisions for myself, how careful I have to be for what I decide, because human judgment is impaired. Human judgment is limited. Human judgment is handicapped. So when I make decisions for myself, you know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said that, you know, we have two eyes. Why do we have two eyes? Baal Shem Tov says, because when you analyze something in life, when you look at something in life, you have to look at it at least twice. You know, we live in a society where everything happens. You know, I think the greatest downfall of society, you know, I think this is strange, is internet blogs, right? You'll say that's the greatest ill of society. It is. You know why? Because people have lost the concept of restraint. You see, we live in today's society. People like vomit everything out. Like, you know, you tweet it, Facebook it, blog it. Besides the fact that nobody really cares about the stupid details of your day-to-day life, why people want it, that's a separate sheer. But the idea is we've forgotten the concept of analysis, to take the time to really mull something over. In today's day and age, if you feel it, tweet it, right? If you feel it, Facebook it. If you feel it, and just put it out there. Maybe it's not right. Maybe it's wrong. We've taken out that internal check. And what this bracha sensitizes us to is a very important idea. There's only one place in this world where there's only one address for absolute judgment, and that is the Ribono Shel Olam. Every other judgment, every other form of human judgment is impaired and handicapped. So therefore, again, on the societal level, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, Hashem, restore us a judicial system where we don't have to just rely on pshara. Restore us a judicial system that allows us to yikov hadin esahar. Ultimately, allow justice to split the mountain. Allow it to split the mountain. On a personal level, I have to be so careful with the decisions and judgments I make. I have to be careful about the decisions I make for myself. The judgments I make for myself. Why? Because human judgment is not just skewed for the other. Human judgment is skewed for myself as well. And so the bracha is sensitizing us to the short-sightedness of our personal judgment. I need to make an important life decision. Mull it over. Think about it. Process it. Maybe discuss it with another, perhaps, who doesn't have your life filter, and get insight on that. Because understand, the more important the decision, chances are the more skewed you are in your ability. Tactic doesn't mean we can't make decisions. It just means be self-aware enough to know that ultimately we don't possess the true ability to be objective and the true ability to live in the world in MS, and certainly vis-a-vis the other. You know, every day we make judgments about others, whether we're consciously aware of it or not, right? People come into our world, they come into our dalaramas, we size them up very quickly, but often based on their externalities, based on how they present themselves, based on how they talk. Sometimes our judgments are correct, but very often our judgments, even if they're somewhat correct, there's always an element that's wrong. This bracha sensitizes us to that. When passing judgment on the other, when being ready to condemn the other, be careful, because human judgment is imperfect. Human judgment is impaired. Hashiva shoftinu kavarishona v'yatzinu kivatla kodesh baruch hu. If we bring this all together, give us self-autonomy, Hashem. Please give us that self-autonomy. Give us just men who can give us the correct bedrock of justice in society. We need you, because without you, there is no Yikov Hadin Eshar. Without you, there's pshara, there's compromise, there's guesswork. Inspire, give us back our Moshe Rabbeinus, who can help us dispel the gray and once again establish our boundaries of black and white, of right and wrong, of MS and Sheker. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do this for us as a people. Help us with this as an individual. Help us understand the limitations of our own ability to judge things correctly, both for ourselves as well as for others. And if we do this, V'aser mimeno yagon ba'anacha. My friends, I think we'd all agree that if we'd be a little bit more careful with how we make our decisions for ourselves, if we'd be a little bit more careful with how we judge the other, we could spare ourselves so much pain. We could spare ourselves so much difficulty. So halavai, the day will come when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will restore our judges as they once were. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu will once again give us that insight and that foresight and that vision to be able to see right and wrong, that ability to live Yikov Adin Sahar. But until that day, the bracha sensitizes us to remember the limitations of our own ability to judge ourselves and others. And hopefully we should find the strength to take the judgments and the decisions we have to make for ourselves a little bit more seriously, analyze them a little bit more thoroughly before passing judgment or, God forbid, condemnation on the other. Take a little bit more time to take a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth look as well, recognizing the limitations of my judgment and with living life with an awareness of the shortcomings of personal judgment. We will save ourselves so much pain by avoiding some of the most terrible mistakes we make in life. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. And Meretz Hashem will continue. Actually, number 14, this Gemara is actually going to be shaykh to next week's shir. So Meretz Hashem will continue with that next week.
Thank you.